So the people who are able to manage the conversation with the C-level and can tell the story to the C-level on how we can reduce customer friction if we all play nicely together and share our data across the organization, they're going to win, because the marketer who's got to go out to ChatGPT like any other monkey and say, I sell software as a service for blah, write me a page. It's all going to sound the same. But imagine if you're harvesting the data that's in your Salesforce and in your customer records and in your customer support records and in all those places to write better content. That is your unique data that no one else can put into a ChatGPT to get the answers that you're seeking. So that's one of the things I'm really trying to tell my team is we need to level up our storytelling game so that we can get the CIOs and the CTOs and the CMOs and all of them sharing data across the organization so we can write better content. So if you're going to use it to write, try to get some unique data that you have from your customers' mouths to write that better content.
Welcome to the B2B Digital Marketer Podcast, a podcast helping you to end your struggle with digital marketing, helping you to pave a new and better path to target and capture your ideal customer. Each week, we teach you how insiders and experts debunk the dreary and become engines of innovation. Now, here's your host, Jim Rembach.
Okay, B2B DM gang, man, this is going to be a fun conversation today because I have Will Reynolds on the show today. Will, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, so we're going to be talking about essential data that organizations need to be looking at to have a successful digital marketing strategy. And we're also going to talk about data that probably they need to consider phasing out if they're looking at it because it's not going to have as much impact or relevance anymore. But before we get into that discussion, Will, if you could share a little bit about your background, especially in that B2B space, so the B2B DM gang can understand where you're coming from.
Sure. So I started off, my background's actually in teaching. I started off to be a teacher, but that I changed somewhere along the way. And in 1999, I started doing digital marketing, specifically search, back in those days, and worked with a lot of consumer brands, but also B2B. I mean, we were doing everything. It was kind of crazy. Back then, DoubleClick was a client and they wanted to rank for the word banner advertising on AltaVista, right? So we had clients across the spectrum, and I've worked with clients all through the chain, Fortune 500, B2B, all the way down. And I've stayed in search since. So, you know, we'll get into this in a little bit, but I think search provides some unique data that helps you to understand the customer almost in real time. And I love harvesting that intel so I can beat my competition.
Well, and that landscape is changing so much. You know, everybody's talking about the iOS update and cookie lists and this, that, that. And it's like, oh my gosh. Then the question is, you know, PPC, you know, is paid ads, you know, are all of those things, you know, really sitting on the verge of total collapse? But here's the thing that I also find interesting, because I worked for an organization that was literally on the technological decline, and they projected it to happen, you know, over a course of like 7 years. Well, it ended up happening in like three. It was just massive. And what it was part of the financial paper payment type of systems. So like checks, we don't hardly write checks anymore, right? But the company dominated the space. And if you've been around long enough, you'll know the name if I drop it. But the thing is, there was still money to be made and profit to be had in a declining market. Right? So there's always money to be made. So then if you think about, okay, well, paid ads and all that and PPC and all that's dying, but there's still money to be made in all that, because it's not going to be totally going away. It's just going to take on a new and different life.
You know, whenever people say, oh, there's this new chat search, it's going to kill Google. Whenever people, oh, it's going to kill Google. Oh, TikTok is going to kill Google for Gen Z. It's like, you know, they're still getting like billions of searches every day. Like I get it. So like, okay, a 10% drop will be the headline. You know, people are leaving Google. And you're like, that means it's like, you know, 1.9 billion searches a day. Okay. They're going to be doing just fine.
I think they'll handle it. Okay. So before we chatted, I shared with you what I wanted to have us to discuss today, And then you actually took some time and wrote down five different elements or points in regards to, you know, essential data that we need to be looking at to create that effective digital marketing strategy. And, you know, maybe even, like I had mentioned, data that we probably don't have to, or should not put as much, you know, weight upon. If you could kind of go through what you had actually put together so that we can, you know, really dig deep into that and see where we're going.
Got it. So primarily the data sets that I like to look at and use start with search. I love organic search data because Google has to put on display in organic search the best answer it has. So therefore, you can get all the clues about what kind of words are those people using on their pages. You know, those little people also ask questions. That's Google's ability to predict what somebody's going to search for next. So then you can incorporate that into your copy and into your customer journey. So I'm a big fan of harvesting all the intelligence out of organic search. However, I spent most of my career going after keywords in Google, but you didn't know if those keywords were going to convert or not because a couple of years ago, Google got rid of keywords inside of Google Analytics. So now as an organic marketer, I didn't know what words were driving conversions. But I like knowing that the work I'm doing is driving value for the client. That's where paid data comes in. Paid data tells you how much are people willing to spend to get in front of this audience? And then what are driving conversions? And I have a really good example for you with that. So that's the typical paid search, organic search piece. But now we've got all these growing channels, YouTube, TikTok, all these. And I'm going to show you how I kind of weave the paid data, the organic data, to help me build out strategies for places like Reddit, YouTube, TikTok, Pinterest, et cetera. So now you're bringing all of that data together, all the YouTube data, all the paid data, all the organic data, and you're using them for what they each do well. But when you bring it together, you can do miraculous things with it, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Well, as you're talking, I start thinking about, again, if I'm looking at B2B and I'm looking at high ticket, you know, solutions and services, you know, I'm starting to think about, why do I need to be even messing with Reddit? Why do I need to even be messing with some of these other places? I mean, look, LinkedIn is where 700 million plus people are sitting that are my potential customers or existing customers. You know, why don't I just really focus in on only that?
Everybody else already knows to go there. My job is to find the things that people don't already naturally think are there and to find them quickly and at scale. So when you're bidding on keywords, right, your brand, let's just say, and people are searching for all kinds of words around your brand, if I start seeing Reddit show up and the top three is an answer, I can go, hey, last month, you spent this much money on these words where Reddit was in the number one spot. Those words converted for you this much, so I know they're driving you MQLs, right? So it's like, I know these words are driving at least marketing qualified leads for you. And Reddit is the number two or three answer. So maybe we need to actually be there because our customers are highly likely to end up there because Google's learned that Reddit's the right answer for this set of questions. And that could be Reddit, it could be Quora, it could be any domain on the internet. So then even things like, especially my B2B clients, oh, they go up funnel and they sometimes have these like big words, CRM and this. And now I can look at when Wikipedia shows up in the first result, we know it's an education query. What does your conversion rates look like on education queries? Oh, and when people type in CRM, look at the questions on Google. Google's saying, what is it? How to define it? I'm looking for this. You're like, but now I can go over to your paid ads and your other ads and go, you're not talking to people in the language by which Google's already learned they want to be talked to. Look at these questions that Google predicted people who search for CRM are going to ask next. Now you take all those questions and run them against your landing page using something like ChatGPT. And you're like, does my landing page at this URL answer the questions that Google already knows are on people's minds? No. I should probably fix that.
That's a great example right there. Okay. So when you were talking about that disconnect, I started thinking, well, is that an issue with short tail, long tail? Is that an issue with top of funnel, middle of funnel? I mean, are those things just kind of areas that we stumble over and that caused this problem?
This might get a little bit in the weeds, but I want everybody to hear me on this because it's important. I'm going to give you a non-B2B example here, but you're going to get it because it's the best one I can drive home. I want you to kind of close your eyes and think. All right, I come to you and I want you to build a website for me. And that website is listing my primary care physicians. Okay? So I can go after the keyword primary care physicians. I'm bidding on the word primary care physicians on Google. I'm getting conversions and I'm getting them at a good CPA. But if I don't look at all the words around the word primary care physician, I start to not recognize that my customer is changing the way they search for this solution. So we look at all those words around the words and you find things like the word black. Now, imagine the web page that you would build if I told you to build me a page to land my customer on that's looking for black primary care physicians. You're like, oh, I know what to do. I'm a smart marketer. I know what to do. You're going to put a page with black doctors on it. You're probably going to talk about the black experience going to a doctor and how that might be different or whatnot, right? If you search for the word black primary care physician or black OBGYN on Google today and click on all the paid ads, none of them have black doctors on them because they're matching to the broader term and they're not looking at the words around the words in the long tail. And then we look at the word black for our client and we go, what's the CPA when the word black is put in front of primary care physician? Oh, it's 30% more. Oh, so now you're paying more to convert people because you're not speaking the customer's language, right? So then they're hitting the back button. They're going back, they're clicking on more of your ads because you're not speaking their language. So whether it's B2B, which I was just at a client yesterday that is a large payroll provider, and we did the same analysis for them. And we said, you don't use the word software on your page. That is why, but you spent $250,000 on software keywords last year. They got you this many conversions. We crawled your pages. Just speak the language of the customer. We'll get more conversions for you. That's how I love to connect the data together.
Okay. Okay. So you're talking really getting significantly more aware, as well as, you know, implementing the things that are necessary in order for you to raise your quality score and drive your cost down.
Right. Right. So, man, I love when I'm talking to somebody that knows their shit. So this helps in so many ways. The first thing is your customer's getting what they searched for, right? That's always a good thing. I believe, I can't do this with the cookies and the iOS stuff anymore. It's really hard to do. But I believe that when you land on a page, there's no black doctors. You're not like, well, I guess I'm just going to pick this doctor. No, you're going to hit the back button, which then means I get to see more ads. Which means I might be clicking on ads and refining my search over and over again. Clicking on your ads multiple times drives up your cost. And of course, the quality score component, right? Imagine how much cheaper it would be. I've been showing that example on the road for 2 years at conferences, and it's never been fixed. And the people that are showing up for some of these words, VentureBacked, ZocDoc, Amazon, One Medical, these are huge companies, and no one's figured it out. And that's how I help people to punch above their weight, right? You're like, wait, like, your customer, you bid on the word. Your customer put the word black. They're doing that 3 times more than they did last year. This is a growing trend. You're paying 30% more to convert them. Let's just build the page.
That's a beautiful example. And, you know, it goes back to what I was saying. I mean, even though some things may be declining and they're getting, becoming, let's just say, out of favor, there's opportunity. It happens all the time. I mean, I heard something, somebody was talking about, guess what? You need to think about maybe sending snail mail again. Guess what? You need to think about the ones that are still remaining, advertising in newspapers again. I mean, because all of these types of shifts that happen is it's kind of like a herd mentality. Everybody runs over there.
And then the costs get more up there because there's more competition over there. And then as people exit that market, things get a little bit better. So I'll tell you this. I think ChatGPT and generative search is going to cause a resurgence in PR, the value of PR. Because if you understand the way these LLMs work, it's like, I'm predicting what word I think comes along with CRM. Well, it should probably be HubSpot. It should probably be Salesforce. It should probably be this, right? So imagine if you're a brand, now you're like, as these LLMs update their databases, oh, we're seeing this word used more around CRM than we did last time. Therefore, when people say, which CRM is best for a company like blah, 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 we've been seeing your name out there more. Well, how do you get your name out there more? PR, man.
That's a really good point. And I, you know, that landscape has shifted quite a bit. And I mean, everybody is really getting on, I think, a false bandwagon in a lot of different ways in regards to this whole concept of standing out. You know, it's, you know, and because for many years, some of these people were saying, who were seen in esteem as thought leaders, is really, you want to be successful, you need to turn your organization into a media company. I think that that is having a significant backlash.
And look, even at Disney.
Even, well, yeah. and organizations that are really creating some good quality content just can't be seen because there is just so much more noise. And it's going to get 10x worse in a very short period of time.
I'm not looking forward to it. You know, so I think a lot about when content becomes this easy to produce all of a sudden. The market didn't grow, right? So it's like, it's not like there's more buyers. It's just more people freaking like producing average content. So then what Google and these different sites have to do is figure out, how do I not index that, right? You're going to 10x the amount of content out there for the same amount of people with problems. And I honestly think, again, comes back to traditional signals. You have to build your brand, because if Google's going to say, you know what, the New York Times wrote this article and these other 80 sites wrote a similar kind of article, which one should I rank if they all kind of sound the same and are using the right words? I'm going to go with who I trust. So I believe that there's going to be a deluge of content. I am not sure if Google's infrastructure, I don't know anything about it, but I'm like, that's a lot of extra content to have to crawl. So I can imagine that they're like, well, we're not going to crawl the New York Times less and maybe not get their content when it's fresh and up to date. But, you know, Will-Reynolds-Jeep-Store.net. I haven't seen you around before. I'll crawl you once every month, no matter how much content you're producing.
That's a great point. Again, all these, you know, technical SEO types of elements that if you're not in the know and you don't stay in it on a consistent basis, you'll never even find where the opportunities exist. And then you'll always be banging your head against the wall. Okay. So Go back to and reiterate that point one more time before we go on to the second one that we talked about, just a moment ago. Well, the first point you mentioned
about the PR example, the importance of PR.
Yep.
Yes.
Just kind of reiterate that one more time before we go on to number two.
We were talking about, you know, things that are old become new again, how things fall out of favor. And as a digital marketer, I'm finding myself thinking, in a world where LLMs are basically just predictors of words likely to come next, how do you influence the words that are used around your brand? That's not the job of an SEO. It's the job of public freaking relations, man.
Perfect. Okay. Now our next point.
I have another one for you, but it's a new one.
Go right ahead.
Be careful of Performance Max. So Performance Max is this Google's like a two-sided coin, man. Like, so they're saying, do Performance Max. We will optimize your campaigns automatically. And we're going to do all this stuff, and we're going to put your ads in places like YouTube and other places, but we're always going to make sure that your CPA goes down from what you're spending today. What marketer on the planet doesn't say, yes, I want my cost to go down? So you sign up for Performance Max. And when you sign up for Performance Max, you lose the ability to know what sites Google puts your ads on and the words people used. So wait a second. My cost of entry to get this lower CPA is that I will never find the fact that people are putting black in front of primary care physician. I'll never be able to find it because I gave up my ability to see my search terms in exchange for a lower CPA. But you don't think Google's going to allow? Google today knows those ads aren't good for black CPA or black primary care physician. They already know that, but yet they allow you to bid on it anyway.
Sure.
Right? They make money on it, right? The more wrong answers that you have in the search results, the more people double, triple, quadruple dip on all the different paid search advertisers. So watch Performance Max, my friends, because you are giving up your customer intelligence. And that's the only way you can punch above your weight, because if everybody's just throwing in to the algorithm and the algorithm's figuring it out, it's really hard to know what levers to pull. And now you have no levers to pull because it's all just in the algorithm, and Google just makes sure that you get leads and they come in under a certain number. Whereas I'm pulling levers like, ooh, black showed up. Let's build a better page than everybody else. And nobody knows that. But if you take that away with Performance Max, I'm screwed. That's one of my really big things I want listeners to understand, is because Google is saying, everybody, look how much easier it'll be. You just give it all to us and we'll just manage it for you. And people are like, that's great. Oh my God, my CPA went down. Of course it did the first time. And then once it slowly creeps up, you now have no data to figure out why your CPA is going up.
Man. Okay. So there's definitely, I would think there's going to be some backlash on that, but I would also have to think that they don't care.
So here's how to think about Google. I'm working on my analogy. So please tell me if this one's a little off, but I'm working on it because people need to understand what they're doing. Imagine going to the supermarket and all the prices change dynamically based on what's in your bank account. So if you say, I'm willing to pay up to $100 for a lead, then Google's like, well, we didn't go over that, but we let you get clicks on black primary care physician, even though you have no black doctors, because, and then we automatically built your ad copy. So Google will also go, oh, just upload these different snippets. We'll put it all together and write your ad copy. So Google's got no problem putting black or African-American in front of primary care physician in the ad to entice the click. But then Google has no way of updating your landing page to make sure it's actually the right solution. So again, keep this in mind. When Google gets wrong answers to people in paid search results, they make more money because you click on the first one and it's wrong. So what do? You click on the next paid ad and that's wrong. And then you click on the third paid ad and that's wrong. They get the triple dip. So there's no incentive for Google to make sure that when people get to your site, they get the right answer. Because if you got the right answer on the first click, you might not go to the second one. And because they have taken away the ability for you to see the difference between the paid and organic, tons of people are accidentally clicking on paid results.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So beware of Google Performance Max. What's next?
Okay. So the next thing that I'm talking to everyone about is the hype around ChatGPT. Are you ready to make that move?
Absolutely.
All right. I was a skeptic. I was a big skeptic early on. And like we talked about earlier, my job also is to look around corners. So I saw it and I'm like, this isn't good early on. The thing that made me stop being skeptical, I think every marketer is thinking, oh, I can use ChatGPT to write content. That is table stakes. It is actually, dare I say, it's the worst way for you to use your marketing brain when it comes to ChatGPT. Because this is going to get a little geeky, so I hope it's okay. I kind of live in the geeky world. Wikipedia has their traffic data publicly available, but it sits in an API. Most of us marketers, I don't know Python, I don't code into APIs, right? But it would be helpful for me to know trends on traffic for Wikipedia, because I don't get to see my competitors' pages that sit in the top 10. But if Wikipedia's in the top 10, I can now compare my traffic against somebody else's traffic. It'd be nice to have that, right? Oh, I got to get a developer who then has got to like write scripts and stuff for me, and they got other work and I can't get prioritized. I went to ChatGPT. This is something I learned 3 years ago, and I kept it coming back into my inbox every month. Some month I'm going to get some time to work on this project. 3 years it came in my inbox every month. Last month it came in my inbox. I said, ChatGPT can write code for me. I've never written a lick of Python in my life. This was my first prompt. I heard that Wikipedia's data is publicly available in BigQuery. Enter. Yes, it is. Here's the table. Okay. Here's the schema. Here's all the data that they have. Okay. Can you write me a Python script that goes into the API and pulls out all the top Wikipedia pages that I'm tracking against my clients on? Sure. Builds the Python script. You go, wait a second. I've been wanting to do this for 3 years and haven't found the time. Every month for 3 years. And I got the Python script written in 10 minutes. But then the Python script didn't work. It failed. And it goes, I'm going to look up the error message that I got from Wikipedia. It did it on its own. It looked up. It was like, I didn't complete the task. So I'm going to look up the error message I got. It goes, oh, I read the documentation and you've got to put your email address in this part of the code. I went, well, where am I going to find that? It goes, just give me your email address. I'll put it in. I put my email address in. 2 seconds later, all the data for Wikipedia over the last 2 years where my client is competing against Wikipedia showed up in a spreadsheet for me. That's how marketers should be using ChatGPT. You can build these little mini products to solve problems. And the hardest thing is ChatGPT and your problems is the new Google it. I had a team member the other day. My client wants to get an alert set up out of Google Search Console. Google Search Console doesn't have alerting, right? Whole team is going back and forth. Oh, Google doesn't have that. Ah, you'd have to download it. Ah, you'd have to do this. I took the person's question, put it in ChatGPT and said, this is what I'm trying to accomplish. Whenever a new page shows up in Google Search Console, I need to know and be alerted via email. Can you show me how to do it, right? Here's the API instructions. It goes and reads the instructions for the Google Search Console API, comes back, writes the Python. Says, here it is. And then it says, here's the Python I'm going to write to send the email out. You want that sent every month? What email address do you want it sent to? Done. Now what I'm doing is I'm going back to my team members and I'm saying, this is allowing us to say yes to more clients, solve their problems, not write them a piece of content because everybody's flooded that market. That market's already flooded. Everybody knows you can use ChatGPT to write content. Most people don't know that you can use ChatGPT to write code to solve your specific problem you have right now and turn it into value.
Well, as you're talking, it goes back to what we talked about. This is essential data that we need to start implementing in our strategy and look at, you know, things that we are sitting there scratching our heads and don't have answers to that are really, you know, as I keep saying this, and I've said this for a long time, is a lot of the things that we're discussing today in regards to being more effective B2B marketers and sellers is not an Acer. It's not an issue of thriving. It's an issue of survival.
Look at the cuts.
It's a survival thing now. The rapid pace of change, the even just kind of like what you explained right where with ChatGPT and writing code and things like that. I now can take that idea in my head and be a developer with ChatGPT. And you know what? So can everyone else.
So can I love that you said that because it's one of the things that I'm realizing is every time my ethos is to try to raise my industry. So therefore I've always shared everything that I know. Cause like my background was in teaching. Like you don't like keep stuff from the students to try to get leads, right? You tell them everything you know and try to educate them, but you better believe that when you put stuff out there like that, you have instantly educated everybody. But here's what I've learned about, I've been on stage for 20 years, giving everything I literally know out for free. And what I learned is people aren't going to do it anyway. But because you gave it all out, they're going to call you first when they're ready, right? They're like, you know what? I like you because you showed me how to do it all myself. You didn't show me how to do the first part and go, call me for the second part. You literally empowered me to do all of it. That's the kind of company I want to work with. It's pretty much how we grew the whole damn company.
Yeah, I mean, when you start talking about the servicing piece and you start talking about the thought leadership piece, there is a fine line between some of the IP that you have to retain for your organization in order for it to function correctly and continue to, you know, to grow and gain more clients. Some of those pieces, you know, you do, but other pieces, yes.
We're pretty much open with everything. We're like an open source kind of company. Like everything we do, I talk about publicly because here's the other thing. There's this interesting byproduct of giving out everything you know. It makes you hustle and innovate again because you don't sit back on your laurels and you're like, oh, well, you know, nobody knows this thing is out there. I'm like, no, everybody knows it's out there. And it kind of makes me want to go back to the lab and innovate again because I'm like, I'm going to have no competitive advantage in 6 months. What I have learned is the market moves a little bit slower than you think sometimes and you gave it all out, but then you get to grow your brand. For me, it's brand building. I'll take the brand side of it over the IP value side of it because the brand for me brings in all my leads. I don't have to have a huge sales team. Oh, let's just call Seer because you know what? They're always out there helping marketers like me do really cool stuff. And they're not like holding half of it behind their back and giving me half of it. They always give all of it. Okay. So when I get tired, I'm going to call them to pick me up. Okay. And it's worked out pretty good.
Okay, Will, I would love to have that Python script.
Yes, I can copy paste. I have it on YouTube already.
Okay, so now let's move on to our next bullet point. So we talked about, you know, making sure that and thinking about using ChatGPT quite differently.
Yep.
What's next?
All right. So I'm going to tell you how to actually get more value out of ChatGPT, because so many people don't, if you're going to use it for content. So I know everybody's running to it for content. Please don't flood the internet with bad shit, right? So let's talk about the data that your competitors don't have. I believe that marketers are going to have to get better at speaking a language of a CIO or a CTO. I was just at a large B2B client yesterday. ChatGPT is shut down there at the C level. So if it's shut down at the C level, you're going to fall behind. You can't take advantage of these things. So we've got to find a way to speak to the gatekeepers of the data, because really where I think where you can produce better content is when you look at your chat logs. What are my actual customers saying? How does my content on the website today answer that? Oh, and then let me look at the script from my team member who answered that question for them and make sure my content gets updated on the website. So I believe that your ability, but somebody's, oh, I'm in the customer service team. That's my data. That's my data. Like, what do you need it for in marketing? And it's like, but this is all our customer. And I think the people who are able to manage the conversation with the C-level and can tell the story to the C-level on how we can reduce customer friction if we all play nicely together and share our data across the organization, they're going to win. Because the marketer who's got to go out to ChatGPT like any other monkey and say, I sell software as a service for blah, write me a page. It's all going to sound the same. But imagine if you're harvesting the data that's in your Salesforce and in your customer records and in your customer support records and in all those places to write better content. That is your unique data that no one else can put into a ChatGPT to get the answers that you're seeking. So that's one of the things I'm really trying to tell my team is we need to level up our storytelling game so that we can get the CIOs and the CTOs and the CMOs and all of them sharing data across the organization so we can write better content. So if you're going to use it to write, try to get some unique data that you have from your customers' mouths to write that better content.
And you know, what you talk about is what I refer to, and I was influenced by somebody saying you need to start looking at the entire ecosystem. So let's look.
Better said.
Let's look all at all these different data sets that we could have available to us in order to be able to, you know, attract, you know, nurture, you know, convert all of these things. Look at all these different data sources, you know, and make a determination in regards to that ecosystem. You know, what we're actually going to do in regards to our strategy and metrics that we're going to use to be able to track it. And, you know, the data that we need in order to be able to drive better decisions so that we can do all of those things that you're talking about. Okay. So I would dare to say we need to move on to your final bullet point here, because I also want to talk about things that we probably shouldn't look at before we depart as well. So what's your next bullet point?
Oh, you want to talk about things we shouldn't look at?
I do.
All right. This is going to be a little controversial. I'm like, do I really want to put this out there? I think I do. How many links you have, the value of those links, and things like monthly search volume are irrelevant numbers, in my opinion, because they are estimates of things that you can get out of your paid data, and or Google has found better ways to understand the value of the trust of your website that doesn't require you to build a bunch of links to your pages all the time. Now, that's controversial. You know, people be like, you know, but most of the people that think it's controversial are people whose title says link building, right? It's like, you know, if I had an SEO come to me and tell me they need me to build links to my site to help me to rank for my keywords, I would really make them explain, how did you arrive at that conclusion? It's needed. I'm not saying it's not needed, but I'm finding it needed in less and less cases to get the outcome. The goal is to show up for a query that a customer is looking for. The goal and the job to be done is not to build links. That was never the job to be done. It was to help the customer find a solution to their problem. Well, Google's gotten better at looking at other signals that don't always require tons and tons and tons and tons of links to your site. So I think it's something that people spend a lot of time on because they've heard it kind of old school. And that's a waste. The other thing I'm going to tell you to be so careful of, if you ever hear an SEO say something like, you should have about 10 keywords per page. They're crazy. They're crazy. So it's a great way to ask somebody that kind of question. How many pages, how many keywords can I rank per page? It's the worst thing to answer in the world. Because if you look at the data, you can actually see, oh, this page is able to rank for 4,000 different keywords with one page. But this page is only able to rank for 4 keywords because it's a different competitive set. The words have different meanings. So it's very interesting to watch people say 10, 20, oh, about 30. And then I look at the data that I have and I go, I have pages that literally rank for 4,000 keywords and pages that can only rank for one.
Well, then, I mean, kind of like what you're saying is there, I'm like, well, how do you know the difference? Because, you know, I mean, can one page realistically, you know, actually rank and rank of with significance? And let's talk about the rank. The reality, when you start talking about the way that people behave, if I'm not in those top, you know, 3, 4, 5, it doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah, usually no. But keep in mind, remember, with data, you don't need best practices. So what I can tell you is I've got all the data that shows click-through rates by industry, by my clients. If you're looking for a cardiothoracic surgeon, you're going to go to page 2. If you're looking for a definition of a thing, you're not going past the top 3. So then it's important to be able to look at the data to be able to say, oh, these kind of words for this kind of client, people are going to page 2 a lot. It's a high consideration business. It's not that much work to scroll and click down a little bit more. And you're going to have somebody crack open your chest and put in a stent. I think you're going to go to page 2. So I think I have the data to prove it, right? So yeah, you're right. Like most people in most searches don't do that, but it's so important to know the outlier so you can properly consult with your client on like, oh no, for you, if we're at number 6, we're probably going to gain just as much traffic as if we're number like 2 or 3 for the serious searcher because you're a cardiothoracic surgeon.
You know, that's very insightful. I mean, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about before. And I didn't say it, but I'm going to say it now is that, you know, we can oftentimes take, you know, and we always say that we will buy quality, right? However, oftentimes we behave and we'll buy the cheap. And dude, so if I buy the max, if I buy some of these other things, what's going to be the outcome?
So it's interesting. I have a couple of fintech unicorn type clients. And the quality is very interesting. I would say 2 years ago, quality didn't matter. Hit my number. After these layoffs have come through these companies, now all of a sudden it's like, hey, well, remember when you were talking to us about quality? We need to improve the quality of the lead. It's like, yeah. So I think it's a lesson in KPIs. People are going to work the KPIs they're given. And if you're given top line only, they didn't care that they were wasting 15% of their budget on these bad words that I was finding that didn't mean anything for their business because they weren't incentivized to do that. I'll tell you, I'll leave you with this as we wrap up. I believe the ROI of SEO is decreasing. And I think it's important for people to think of that because there's search generative experience above the organic results. There's 4 ads sometimes above the organic results. You know, type in the word vacuum cleaner. You're going to see like, you're like, where is the organic results even exist on this page? So always challenge your marketers to have a point of view on the ROI of their work over time. And you can see if they're completely biased because it's like, no, I can't. Like you said, if you're not, sometimes if you're number one, you're almost on page 2 being ranked number one. That's why it's so important for you to know, is this number one below like 5 different sets of snippets that really makes it like number 8? Right? These are the kind of things. So you have to be cognizant of that, folks. And I sell millions of dollars of SEO work, but I have to recognize that the value is different and pivot my business accordingly. So we're, you know, hoping to figure more out about how Google's doing search generative experience. But, you know, you have to recognize these things or otherwise you're just drinking the Kool-Aid.
Will Reynolds, thanks for telling us all not to drink that Kool-Aid.
You got it.
How does the B2B DM gang get in touch with you?
Dude, Google me, baby. You know, my name is Will Reynolds, Will with 1L. You can find me on my company's website. And I also talk a lot about business failure. marketing failures. It's kind of my shtick on my personal blog. So you might enjoy the one that I wrote the time that we, for a large B2B cloud company, we overspent their monthly budget by $200,000. One of my team members let some budget keep running, and I had to write a $200,000 check that month. And that pretty much wiped me out for the year. And I wrote that story on my blog, right? So those are the kind of stories that I like to share on my personal blog, because I think that we as marketers need to, and CEOs need to talk more about our failures, not just that we're all crushing it and killing it every time.
That's a great point. Will Reynolds, thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom. And we wish you
Dude, thanks for having me on. I appreciate you, man.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Go now to join the B2B DM gang in the B2B Marketer LinkedIn group, where you can connect with other B2B DM disruptors and get access to our B2B DM cheat sheets, checklist, and guides. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, please help by going to iTunes to rate, review, and subscribe. And share the show on all of your digital platforms. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. And always remember, you can automate your lead capture, but you must lure your lead.